I'm going to start the recording. We want to preserve this. This will be posted right after the webinar, as we have several pages of webinars posted at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And with that, what I want to do is bring on a man who has been incredibly committed to bringing out the truth. And particularly his focus has been since he discovered some horrific information. He did some investigation and found out some things really weren't right, even though all of the respected authorities, the media, everyone told us that certain things happened a certain way on a specific date, which we all know as September 11th. 2001. And on that date, there's a lot of things that happened that there are many, many questions about. And of course, we could pontificate on the most obtuse or unusual or eclectic questions you could ever imagine, and go on literally for days and weeks on all the speculations and questions. But I think you'll find that this gentleman, he took a look at more of the scientific end of things, more of the using the principles of physics and the principles of, you know, gravity and all of the different things that we know is pretty much absolutes, and looked at things that could be shown very concretely, very factually, and to formulate questions from that. If this is so and that's so, then how can this happen? How can this be? How can what they say happen happen? So with that, I want to, you know, and he's committed so much time. He travels the world, literally, speaking everywhere. He takes so many interviews, and I'm just so pleased that we have him today. I want to welcome to the webinar Richard Gage. How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing good, Earl. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, I want to maybe just give us the capsule version of how you came about to be where you're at with doing what you're doing today. And then it might be really good to give us an update on what's happening today.
Sure. First of all, I'm an architect with a member of the American Institute of Architects. And I've been working well over 20 years on many, many different types of buildings, including most recently in Las Vegas, a $400 million project with mid-rise office space, retail malls, and parking structure. Altogether, about 1,200 tons of steel framing in that project. And I was, about 4 years ago, I was on my way to observe the construction at a high school that I was working on. And I heard on the radio David Ray Griffin, a researcher who has written 9 books on the subject of 9/11, but I had never heard any alternative theory before about how these towers came down, the Twin Towers on 9/11, and I was just shocked. I'm saying, how can this even be true? How can this be on the radio? Wouldn't I have heard about it by now? But certainly not. I mean, it hit me like a 2x4. He was talking about beams being expelled out of the side of the Twin Towers, dripping with molten metal. He's talking about the oral histories of 100 first responders talking about sounds of explosions. And I'm going, what? So I went and heard him that or the following day at the Grand Lake Theater. Well, I went there, but they were sold out. So I had to go home and watch it on the web. And it was just amazing. His hypothesis sounded believable. All this evidence seemed to stack up, but I was incredulous that this is either the biggest hoax in history that he's doing, or that has been done on all the American people. And my research led me to believe that, come to agree that it was the latter after reviewing this evidence. In fact, I presented much of it a few months later to the firm that I worked for. All 15 architects came to hear the presentation, and they thought I was nuts before this presentation, most of them. Afterward, all 15 agreed with me. They're in shock. They signed the petition And those are the first, 14 out of 15. My boss was Middle Eastern, so he didn't sign the petition. But they all agreed with me. And we have our first 15 architects, including myself, and engineers for 9/11 Truth, the firm, the organization that I founded about that time. So we now have over 1,000 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation of the three World Trade Center high-rises on 9/11. And we are growing strong, very strong, and we're continuing to press on. I've given presentations now over 160 times in 16 different countries to audiences of 200 to 600. And by a show of hands, most all of them agree with us, who didn't before the presentation. Afterwards, they agree with us that this evidence is very, very convincing, and many of them sign our petition. So that's a brief overview of the how the organization got started.
You know, I was wondering. I know that
can't hear you very well.
One of the things that
can't hear you. Still can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Can you hear me now?
There we are.
Okay, I had a little mute out thing that happened there. But anyway, I wanted to. You know, one of the things that's very important is that we know that with any type of truth movement, whatever it was, you can get all kinds of people that will step forward and get passionate about or get into the whole endeavor in some fashion. And obviously those people that are sometimes are the loudest or that make the most wacky noise about something can be the ones that people focus on and remember something by. This was a real departure, your formation of the group that you formed and the things that you're doing was very different because now we're talking about hard science, we're talking about concrete evidence, we're not talking about people, you know, maybe it was the aliens or whatever, you know, whatever kind of crazy stuff that people might come up with about, you know, what happened there. And then that even people that have some ideas that make a little sense, but they're still not based on a factual thing. There's a huge leap that you have to do to come to their conclusions. There's so much there that's not connecting it. You can surmise, you can think, well, maybe if this and this, then maybe that, but it doesn't necessarily follow. It could be other things too. So you lended an amazing amount of credibility, and particularly the fact that there were high-profile individuals that came forward. Obviously, since you carry that kind of weight, I'm sure the media and all of the establishment respected you as heroes. They just opened their arms to you, right?
No. we don't seem to have the support of the media and the government officials. You know, half the public, I would say, is incredulous, as I was, upon first hearing this information. Even though, as you suggest, it's not conspiracy theory, we're talking about the science-based forensic evidence found at the crime scene. And we present this, and people will say things like, for instance, I wouldn't believe that even if it were true. We'll talk about what that is, this evidence in real quick here. But, I was getting to your question and I forgot it.
Oh, no, I was just saying that they embraced you with
open arms. We've gotten a deaf ear from the media and government. We've been to 20 different congressional offices presenting this information. They all have been given the basics of the evidence and the petition that over 1,000 professionals have signed, technical professionals. It's very difficult. I mean, we get more press in foreign countries. We've gotten some really great press in New Zealand, in Spain, from Russia today, and we're going to China in October 8th. We'll be on the Dialogue program, which is the largest news talk program to the English-speaking audience of China. It'll reach 60 million people, so we're very excited about that. We'll be speaking in Shanghai, Beijing, and Hong Kong.
Well, you know, that's a testament to, and it's something that it has to be done in that fashion where you have to do it at that level. There's no assistance to really get it out there. You know, if they were not holding back the information from getting out on this, typically the media will have fun making fun of things or attacking people or showing something that's just zany, people that are out of their mind. But by the fact that they just stonewall it and ignore it, the same way with officials, because people typically would say, look, let's just blow this out of the water now. We'll be done with it. It's over. If enough questions are asked, enough things are shown to be out of sync with reality that it's pretty well done. But they don't even take up the inquiry, either from a ridicule standpoint or a zany human interest standpoint of fascinating news, juicy news, or from a real standpoint of let's settle the question. Let's put this
aside.
Well,
let's talk about what it is that they're not looking at.
Yes, let's do that.
I do is present the third skyscraper to collapse on that day to architects, engineers, and others, the media, the government, first, because most people don't even know about it. It is the third worst structural failure in modern history, and yet we have no reporting of it in the media after the first couple of days, with very few exceptions. And most architects and engineers know nothing about it, and yet, incredibly, completely unprecedented failure of a 47-story skyscraper. The complete destruction of it, just due to what they say is normal office fires. So this has never happened before. We have never had an office fire, even though we've had much larger, longer-lasting, and hotter fires than these ravage high-rises, yet not one of them has collapsed. So this is very important background information. What they do say is that the 8 to 10 fires, which by all photos and videos are fairly small, caused a new phenomena in this building. These fires were started presumably by the debris that impacted the building here and there from the North Tower's collapse earlier that morning. Because at 5:20 in the afternoon, this building begins a precipitous, sudden free fall acceleration. This building drops as fast as a bowling ball falling off the top of it, straight down then into its own footprint, almost like a house of cards. This is a highly redundant steel-framed building that's five times stronger than it needs to be to resist any type of collapse with redundant connections throughout and so forth. And yet, magically, all of its gravitational potential energy is converted in the 6.5 seconds that it took to drop, converted into kinetic energy, motion. It's dropping straight down through the path of greatest resistance, straight down through the 40,000 tons of structural steel designed to keep this building from collapsing. What does that mean? That means the columns in this building had to have been removed, and removed systematically, sequentially, floor by floor, within a tenth of a second of each other on each given floor. That is the only way a high-rise can fall straight down. You know, collapsing buildings, when they're collapsed due to natural forces like fires or earthquakes or whatever, they will fall in large gradual deformations with falling over, obeying the law of entropy, falling to the path of least resistance into chaos. And Yet, this building does nothing like that. It looks exactly like an engineered phenomena, and there are witnesses that are hearing sounds of explosions at the onset of destruction, and yet this hypothesis was never considered by NIST. NIST is the National Institute for Standards and Technology. They are responsible for explaining the collapse of the Twin Towers, which they did not do. We'll get to that. And this collapse of Building 7, which, by the way, wasn't even mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report, the destruction, complete massive failure of this building. Now, anybody who looks at this will see instantly that it looks exactly like a classic controlled implosion that the handful of demolition companies that do this work have shown us, like the old hotels in Las Vegas. We put it side by side, in fact, and it looks exactly like that, with a classic kink in the middle, the walls pulling inside for the most part, and straight down. So we would expect to find evidence of explosives or incendiaries, depending on what was used to bring this building down, if it were brought down in that manner. So we'd also expect the investigating agencies like NIST and FEMA and others to look for evidence of incendiaries and explosives, and yet they said they never found any evidence. Later, 2 years later, they acknowledged that they never looked for it at all. Well, how can you find what you're not looking for? They refused to look for it then, and they still refuse to look for it, even though the evidence is overwhelming to most every person who looks at this. That's why the 9/11 truth movement is growing rapidly throughout the United States, because the unexplained or the misexplained or the fraudulent cover-up of the destruction of this building becomes really obvious. To have a building drop in 6.5 seconds, the overall drop is 6.5 seconds. There's a theory put out by NIST that the inside of the building was caving in the first 15 or more seconds, and then the overall building drops. But if there was any caving in on the inside of the building prior to this building dropping, it would have caused massive warpage and indentations and bulging on the exterior frame of the building. It would have looked very differently. In fact, their own computer analysis showing us how this building dropped shows such massive warping and tipping of the building and crumpling like a beer can on top. It bears no resemblance to the actual videos of the drop. So they can't even get their own computer animation, which they worked on for 6 years or something, to behave properly like the mimic the behavior of the building. In order to have this building drop in 6.5 seconds, there's 400 structural steel connections that are failing per second, and that's what their computer model shows as well. And that computer model won't, and yet that can't happen in a fire. A fire doesn't destroy all the connections in the building at once from floor to floor. It's a very large, it's a very slow, gradual process. This is proven by fire tests and their effect on buildings, steel buildings, whether they're fireproofed or not, and this one was, and there is no plane that hit this building. So it doesn't have the convenient excuse that they use in the Twin Towers explanation that the plane knocked the fireproofing off. So from beginning to end, it makes no sense. But in the debris pile, the first responders find molten metal flowing like lava, they say. It's found by the presidents of the demolition companies, by the first responders, the iron workers. There's no question about all of this evidence of molten metal. It turns out to be molten iron. Tests done on the previously molten iron chunks that were brought up by the ton, cleanup workers, iron workers. It has the evidence, they find that it's molten iron. not melted steel, not melted copper or aluminum or anything else. And it has in it the chemical evidence of thermite, like aluminum and manganese, etc. This is damning evidence for a suspicion of incendiaries, aluminothermic incendiaries. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. It's not normally used in controlled demolitions. But there are patented devices that will, cutter charges, that will eject molten iron in milliseconds through structural steel. And in fact, those patents are developed to the point where the casing itself is it's self-consuming. There's nothing left in the rubble except thermite. Excuse me, molten iron. And of course, they find all of this molten iron. FEMA themselves documents a piece of steel that is left behind in the rubble, a girder from World Trade Center 7. It looks like Swiss cheese. It's been melted. It has intergranular melting. That means there's molten iron invading the grain boundaries of the steel. Well, we haven't used iron in steel high-rise construction for almost 100 years. So where does this molten iron come from? Well, it is the byproduct of thermite. Thermite is composed of iron oxide powders and aluminum powders. When it goes off, it creates an incredible molten iron effulgence. So this is what it does. Now, this piece of steel and this documentation in Appendix C of FEMA was completely ejected from the official report. It was just. Gone. It's been covered up. It's not brought forward into the World Trade Center 7 NIST report. So this is a part of obfuscation of evidence. We want, in fact, a federal grand jury investigation of the leaders of this NIST investigation, or building report is really what it is. This would be Shyam Sunder, the lead project investigator, and his associate John Gross, the co-project leader. We need an investigation of these individuals too, and their role in the obfuscation of this evidence and not reporting not only what we've talked about so far with all this molten metal and melted steel, but the findings throughout the dust, powdered concrete layered throughout lower Manhattan, 4 to 12 inches deep, incredible quantities of pulverized concrete, pulverized to a fine powder like talcum powder. How does this happen? In the case of the Twin Towers, there's 90,000 tons of concrete in these buildings, each of them. And yet, in the photos that we see at the base of this building, you don't see any floors in them. You see a two-story pile of core columns, other perimeter columns, aluminum cladding. We're missing 110 floors that should be found stacked up in some fashion, very visible, 20 stories high. It's unbelievable. They have been pulverized, not just the concrete, but the metal decking into which the concrete was originally poured. Composite metal decking, 220 acres of it is missing, most all of it. And it is found pulverized in small metal filings in all of the dust spread throughout lower Manhattan, too, along with the 10,000 floor trusses in each of the buildings, along with the thousands and thousands and thousands of steel file cabinets in which they couldn't find but one piece of one file cabinet. This incredible explosiveness that we see in the top floors as they're beginning to descend is hurling all of this material in a 1,200-foot debris around the base of the tower, outside the base of the tower. Everything almost is blown outside, and including 9-ton perimeter wall units that are ejected at 60 miles per hour laterally, instant speeds, like a cannonball shot landing 600 feet away, many of them. This is direct evidence of explosives. That takes incredible quantities of energy. And we're told that this 15-story section above the point of jet plane impacts is driving the rest of the building down in the case of the North Tower, and a 30-story section in case of the South Tower. But what we see in the videos is, in each case, is that this section is being destroyed. In the first 4 seconds of the North Tower, it is gone. It is telescoping before there's any moment from the point of movement, from the point of jet plane impacts down. This upper story appears to be like a mini controlled demolition. It has been destroyed. There's nothing left to drive the rest of the building down. After that, it's the building tearing itself apart at almost free fall acceleration. It turns out to be about two-thirds of free-fall acceleration. In other words, the building is still accelerating straight down through the path of greatest resistance, even though this so-called pile driver has been destroyed itself. So we see these bands of explosions, like the fireman described, 100 of them out of 500 that were recorded orally, 100 of them are talking about sounds of explosions, flashes of light at the onset of the destruction of each of these towers. These are qualified professionals. It's an unbelievable array of evidence that was hidden from us by the city until August of 2005, when the state New York Court, State of Appeals finally voted required the city to give this information to the New York Times. And so then we found out about it. But all this information was given to the 9/11 Commission, and it was not reported. There are no reports of explosions in the official theory, and yet there are hundreds of witnesses of explosions. How are we doing?
We're doing good, and I believe, if I remember right, I think it was... Was it Willie Rodriguez, kind of the more better-known fellow that brought that question into mind about the explosions even before there was any plane hitting the towers, and some very unusual things happening that don't fit the official story at all. But he also, I think, they interviewed him extensively, and then proceeded to not make any of that available to show people after spending quite a bit of time and commitment capturing all of that interviewing with him on tape. So
that's right. The 9/11 Commission report was edited and controlled, the commissioners themselves, by Philip Zelikow, the executive director. And what got put in that report was... completely up to him, and none of the directors. It was highly edited, as you say. In this case, this evidence of the explosions not just one witness, William Rodriguez, but many others, including witnesses that documented and were injured by explosions in the basements of these buildings before and after the airplane impacts. So it's obviously highly important information, and there were vans that had explosives in them that were confiscated by the FBI early on in the first week. We heard about this, and there's nothing about it afterwards. So this is damning evidence, and along with the explosions that are seen 20, 40, and 60 stories down below this so-called collapsing building. It's really a zone of destruction. These squibs or isolated ejections of pulverized building materials and explosive focused ejections, they're they occur about 160 to 200 feet per second. These are propelled by explosive speeds. They're not puffs of air being produced by some piston, which is not even up there. This pile driver has been destroyed, so how can it push any air down the elevator shaft? But we're told that's the case. But even if that were the case, we would expect in this large open office planning, which occurs on each floor, the 60 feet, you know, by 200 feet in most cases, is all open. So if any air came out of the elevator hoistway into that office space, it would blow out all the windows, or if it blew out any of them, or many of them, but not these highly vocalized, geometrically precise, violent ejections that occur at the midpoints of the buildings. It's obviously an engineered phenomenon. So this is yet another point that is disturbing the 1,200 architects and engineers who have so far signed our petition. We also have, though, evidence in the dust that is extremely disturbing, all this powdered concrete we talked about. Official sources, the USGS and environmental firms, find billions of previously molten iron microspheres, the size of a human hair, most of them, diameter of a human hair. You can't even see them, a lot of them, with the naked eye. But in every dust sampling, they're ubiquitous. They find them everywhere. All around lower Manhattan. Billions of these previously molten iron microspheres. What does this mean? How do they get there? Well, they document that they're iron, first of all. So where do they come from? We don't use iron in steel high-rise construction. It's not melted steel. Well, molten iron, remember, is the byproduct of thermite, this incendiary, which is used by the military to cut through steel. And so if there were thousands of thermite cutter charges, say, or some form of advanced thermite, which we'll be looking at in a moment, under explosive conditions, the pressures would atomize the byproduct of thermite, which is liquid molten iron, into spheres, billions of spheres. That's what liquid does when it's atomized. It forms itself into spheres. You spray up a water bottle. They're all spheres. In this case, the spheres are liquid molten iron, and they cool and form these tiny little balls. What do they find in them also? They find the evidence of aluminum and manganese and other chemicals which are associated with thermite. So this is direct evidence found by official sources in all of the dust that they have no explanation for. Oh, some people say, oh, this is from the cleanup operations, the welding and cutting equipment. Well, wait a minute. It's found in every sample miles away. It's found on the Brooklyn Bridge and collected only 10 minutes after the collapse, one of these samples. So it's clearly not from the cleanup equipment. It's also found on top of skyscrapers. So there's no explanation for that from official sources that makes any sense whatsoever. But then a physicist, Dr. Stephen Jones, and a small team associated with him, their four samples they test, and they go looking for what might have been the original source of thermite, which would be iron oxide and aluminum powder. Iron oxide, of course, would come to a magnet. So they do magnet studies on the dust. Sure enough, all of these iron spheres come up to the magnet, but also these small chips. One of them was a 16th of an inch long, the largest one. They're red on one side and gray on the other, and they come up to the magnet. Well, what could this be? Well, he zooms into it with his electron microscope, finds that the red side is composed of extremely small particles of iron oxide and aluminum powder, the formation of thermite. This stuff is very special, though. It's so small, these particles, they're 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. 40 nanometers across, these rhomboidal crystalline-shaped perfectly uniform iron oxide particles. And they're found in proximity and intermixed with, intimately, these small wafers, aluminum wafers of 40 nanometers thick by a couple hundred, 400 nanometers long. They're perfectly uniform to each other. And these two are intermixed in a proportion, 1/4 to 3/4, to make up thermite. So here you have indisputable evidence of thermite in all of these hundreds of chips that are found in all four samples that were analyzed. And this is a very highly engineered, advanced nanocomposite thermite explosive. And it is not made in a cave in Afghanistan. This is among the most sophisticated materials made by the Defense Department contracting laboratories. So we've got a real investigation that has to happen and has to account for these particles, which are documented now in a 25-page peer-reviewed paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal. So it's uncontested for a year, this peer-reviewed paper. And people say things like, oh, that's just paint. Well, what I just described to you is not paint. Okay, you put paint in a heater and it doesn't blow up at 420 degrees centigrade. Which this did, and this material, all four samples, along with it's really a high pressure ignition rather than an explosive effect in this differential scanning calorimeter, but it produces all these spheres. And guess what? Those spheres that it produces have the exact chemical makeup that the spheres found by official sources in the World Trade Center dust have. So the cycle's complete. All the evidence adds up to support the hypothesis of direct explosives, which is direct evidence of the controlled demolition of World Trade Center 7 and the very engineered, explosive, uncontrolled, if you will, demolition in the case of the Twin Towers.
Mm. Yes. Well, you, Richard, you probably know that we at Republic Magazine have been definitely committed to bringing out the truth on this topic, that we had a few issues back strictly on 9/11 and presenting a lot of good information on that. You could find that at our website, republicmagazine.com, and look at the back issues there. You can order that issue individually, or if you want to get an activist copies, you can get them as cheap as $1 a piece and then get them out to people to spread the word. But with that conspiracy conference that just happened a couple of weekends ago, as you know, we did the live streaming, and then we also now have posted that entire conference online for people to be able to access it. They can have unlimited access to it 24/7, as many times as they want, indefinitely. And in addition to that, folks that take advantage of this year's will also have access to all of last year's once you're posted there as well. And I'll read this very short bit of information that's on their website in reference to Richard Gage. Richard spoke eloquently about 9/11 at last year's 9th annual ConspiracyCon. More recently, alongside David Ray Griffin and Stephen Jones, Professor Emeritus of BYU, Brigham Young University, among others, he held a very successful press release and conference in San Francisco this past February to further address the importance of a new an honest 9/11 investigation. And although Richard will not be speaking this year, we are honored to have him join us as an official special guest. They thought so much of you, Richard, that they officially designated you as a special guest of honor there. But also, I want to encourage people to take advantage of this streaming package to where you can get not only this year's but last year's, where Richard and numerous other fascinating speakers spoke. And share this, you know, arm yourself with this information as well as information from our webinars, and get this information out to people, because that's how the change is going to happen. As Richard and I brought out, that certainly the media is not going to do it. The official heads of everything are not going to do it. The folks that the pundits we see and hear on through the media, they're just not going to do that job for us. But I want to, if I might, Richard, move to a few questions that have come in. Is that okay with you at this time, or was there somewhere else you wanted to go first?
No, you bet. Let's do that. But I did want to let people know that we have all of this information. We don't just talk about it. We show it in our DVD, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth. And it's available on our website, which is ae911truth.org. That stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So that's ae911truth.org. You can watch portions of the DVD there. It can be purchased. There's other evidence there, links to technical papers and important evidence.
Okay, and is there a general a phone number for the organization, or is that something you give out, or you just do web contact information, or how does that work?
Yeah, we do have a phone number. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
We don't generally give it out, but people can contact us certainly through the website. Also, people can sign up for our free monthly email newsletter on the website. And you can also sign the petition if you want to publicly stand with us. And we need you doing just that, especially if you're an architect or engineer, or if you know any architects or engineers. We're asking you to send the link, ae911truth.org, to every architect and engineer that you can find, so that we can wake up our country, starting with the building professionals.
Okay, very good. Well, and this question comes from someone that's very interesting, because he's a very regular guest on, person that tunes into our webinars, and he does present good information and ask good questions. But he's playing kind of the devil's advocate, and I was going to do that. I have to confess, Richard, I was going to do that too, but I thought he expressed this well, and it's probably a question on a lot of people's minds, and it touches on what you and I had discussed about where we're at today. Phil in London, England says, Richard, what a fantastic job you're doing. However, the Washington Post had a recent editorial about the Japanese member of parliament, Yakuhisa Fujita, I don't know, whatever that is. They wrote that his statements...
Yakuhisa Fujita.
Okay, very good. They wrote that his statements about 9/11 were ridiculous, such as the buildings were brought down by controlled explosions, etc. The disinformation is still in full swing, exclamation point. You have been banging the drum for a long time, and you know there will never be another inquiry. It is obvious that these criminals are not going to allow this to expose what really happened. The whole world is now being hoaxed and paying the consequences of the war on terror. How do you really think this is all going to end? Best regards.
Well, none of us have a crystal ball. None of us have the power that we'd like to control the media or force our government officials to listen and provide a new investigation. None of us alone. But all of us together, this is the power that they fear the most. Is the grassroots waking up of individuals, which is beginning to happen. Hasn't happened nearly enough, I agree with you, but it is beginning to happen. There are millions of Americans and others around the world, perhaps more so around the world, that are waking up, realizing they've been fed lies and that they're being controlled. Their very minds are being controlled and engineered through very sophisticated methods primarily from the media. And so to the extent that we do act and step out of our comfort zone and touch other people around us. And many of us are doing that with hundreds of people a day or thousands on radio interviews and so forth. We are reaching people, and we are putting, like I was reached 4.5 years ago by David Ray Griffin on the radio, something happened in my mind when I heard this information, and I haven't been the same since. And as a result of one individual, me in this case, there are tens of thousands of people who have seen a 9/11 blueprint for truth and who are passing it around very actively. This is just one person, what one person can do. Think if everybody did a lot more than their comfort zone allows them to take on, we can and will, in fact, have a massive awareness and uprising, a peaceful uprising, to force government officials out of office. I mean, we can vote them out of office. But it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of time, and I realize it's very depressing when you look at what's not done yet, what we haven't accomplished yet. But we try to look at the what we have accomplished, which is extraordinary, I think.
It takes time. It really does when you're up against that strong of a force of protecting whatever interest and not wanting this sort of thing to bubble up into the light of day. Definitely. Dan in Ohio says, is it true that all the evidence, debris, et cetera, to find out the truth has been totally destroyed by the government? If yes, how can people ever challenge government's theory at a scientific level?
Well, no, the evidence hasn't been destroyed. 99% of the steel has been sent to China for recycling, by the way, very early on, before even the FEMA report came out, which said, hey, we have no idea how this Building 7 came down. Let's look at the steel and find out. Of course, they had ordered it to China for recycling, the third worst structural failure in modern history, and none of the steel, except for two pieces, was saved. No, there's plenty of evidence. This dust is available in massive quantities in a lot of places. There's enough evidence there. There's enough evidence in the videos of the destruction of these buildings to wake up the American people. If we can simply put it on the TV, they see it. Well, you know, we were in a state of shock during 9/11. We were programmed. We were manipulated and fed false information under altered states of consciousness, really. And so once we take people out of that altered state, which time helps a lot in this case, over 9 years, and now we present the information analytically, they see it. So there's plenty of evidence. There's no problem with evidence. It's a matter of people getting off of their rear ends. In fact, you can stay on your rear end. Just email the aenlmtruth.org link to every architect and engineer, and republicmagazine.com link as well while you're at it. Great magazine.
Thank you. Appreciate that. A minute ago, I realized that I forgot to give out the link for people to get the streaming by demand of the two conspiracy cons, last year's and this year's too, and that is expostop.com/conspiracycon, and that's just like it sounds. Expostop is expostop.com/conspiracycon, and that con part is con. So that way you can find that there and take advantage of that. Let's see. Let's move on to another question on the internet. By the way, if you do have anybody that has any questions that they want to ask that didn't hear the first part when I announced it, if you're on the phone conference bridge line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll see that you'd like your line unmuted and can do so you can ask the question. If you're online, then just type it in that small question box underneath the link and submit that to us, and make sure the question gets asked, time permitting. Let's see, Samuel in Salt Lake City, have you looked into the multi-$1 million put options trade that were made just days before 9/11?
Well, we are architects and engineers focused on the science-based forensic evidence found at the crime scene. There are people who have indeed looked deeply into those put options and have found that, the 9/11 Commission did, and they found that Al-Qaeda wasn't responsible, so they didn't pursue it any further. Well, it ended up, I think, at the doorstep of the Deutsche Bank building, which is controlled by former CIA people. That's certainly an area that needs to be researched, along with many other aspects of 9/11 other than the destruction of these three towers. David Ray Griffin has done an excellent job of exposing many of these aspects, including his World Trade Center 7, the fraudulent science of NIST. He exposes very clearly in the destruction of this building.
Mm. You know, it seems like I remember when that information first began to come out, and it seems like it was of interest. But then just as quickly as it appeared, it just is like turning a spigot off all the way. It just died. No pursuit, nowhere it's going to go at all all of a sudden. And I couldn't help but at that time visualize some powerful figures making some frantic calls and then everything just drying up, you know, calling certain people and saying this will not go see the light of day, it will not go forward or else.
Well, we don't have... theories, or certainly conspiracy theories, we're just laying out the evidence, and that keeps us from carrying a lot of labels, a lot more labels than are being hurled at us now.
Absolutely, I agree with you. That was just kind of a wild comment or speculation, and I realize it has no basis in provable fact until such information exists, and it is speculation. Okay, Maria and Novi, how do you think they would have been ever able to pull off something like a controlled demolition? Wouldn't it require days and months of planning in terms of resources, manpower, equipment, etc.? Won't anybody in the crew blow the lid off and blow the whistle?
It certainly would take months to plan these controlled demolitions. These are extremely highly successful demolitions, and even though they left a whole lot of evidence behind, they were done by professionals among the best. And it takes months to plan and engineer them, to place the explosives. How would somebody have gotten into the Twin Towers to do that without being noticed? Well, if you had access to the elevator shafts in the Twin Towers, you would be immediately adjacent to the core columns and beams, and you could plant those explosives without being seen by any of the occupants, especially if you had the cover operation of, say, an elevator modernization. Well, it turns out that we had the largest elevator modernization in history going on in the World Trade Center Twin Towers the 9 months prior to 9/11. Is it possible that this could have given them the cover they needed to plant these explosives? We need an investigation of ACE Elevator, the elevator company responsible for that modernization. They had 85 employees in the building when the towers were hit, and those employees or contractors or whoever they were fled when the first plane hit the building. These are experts in the delivery system of the rescue vehicle, the elevators that the firemen use. They're supposed to stay around as they normally do. They're called upon in these situations to help the firefighters rescue the victims, but they all fled. It was quite a scandal, and it was documented in USA Today. So we want an investigation of them and the security company. Of course, you'd be bringing pallets and pallets of nanothermitic explosives and God knows what other kind of explosives into the building. So the security company, Securicom, Stratasec, should be investigated as well.
Yes. That is, that's a given. That's a definite thing. Let's see, we've got Brian in Toledo. Is there any headway being made in demands for independent investigation? Do you see it happening anytime soon? And why isn't the mainstream media talking about it at all, even though majority of Americans are not buying the government official story on 9/11?
Well, I think we touched on that. Do you see an area where we didn't touch on yet?
It seems I'm wondering if they came in at a point that they didn't hear the first part. Rather than repeating things, I would really encourage anyone that comes in and misses part of it. The recording will be posted at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And, certainly go to that. Certainly go to Richard's website. You can also take advantage of the streaming at expostop.com/conspiracycon. Those sorts of things. But I think we want to move to other areas, unless you had anything else you wanted to add on the top of that.
Let's go on because we only have a couple of minutes, I think.
Okay. All right. Just so I'll know your schedule, are you pretty much, you've allocated an hour, that's pretty much what you have?
Yeah. Yeah, in this case, I have a conference call I have to attend at 1 o'clock Pacific, which is in about a minute now.
Okay. I don't even know if we can get this person unless they're really, really fast, because I want you to have time to close off. Guest, are you, I just unmuted the line of the... Oh, I think I hung him up. Oh, well, I guess we lost him. I'm sorry, guest, that we lost you. But I think at this time, Richard, in the time remaining, if you would share with us maybe any closing thoughts or comments that you'd like to share with us at this time.
Well, I would sure like to encourage everyone to not sit on this information, to be active, to consult your conscience and say, my God, if this is true, if these buildings were blown up, and most of America led to believe that terrorist hijackers flew the planes into the buildings and the buildings came down by fires and jet plane impacts, then something seriously wrong is happening in our country, because obviously this would have to be planned at in the highest levels of government. It would seem that's a conclusion that's pretty difficult to escape. And if that's true, we have a cancer in our government that must be exposed. And you can't go on with life being normal, knowing that this is going on. You have to do everything you can to expose it. You have to get informed about many of the other issues outside of the World Trade Center, outside of 9/11 even, that are exposed by Republic Magazine, and become a true citizen that questions the government, a true patriot that wakes up others to what you now know, even though you're going to be laughed at, ridiculed, and possibly lose your job and so forth. Everything has to be put at stake, like our founding fathers did when this country was being formed, when we were winning our independence. Well, we've lost our independence. It's been legislated away in the Patriot Act. The Military Commissions Act is threatening it now, or will again. And the other acts. We just have to step forward. So now is the time. This country is calling its patriots. Where do you stand? Do you go back to the fantasy you had before you were aware of this information, that your government is taking care of you, that everything's fine, that just consume and spend and do what we are programmed to do? No, it's wake-up time, people. So join the Republic Magazine and Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and do what you can. Our 9/11 Truth is is among those groups at the spearhead of the 9/11 Truth Movement, because we have the technical credibility of the over 1,000 architects and engineers. And so use us, because it's actually quite successful in waking people up, the concerns of AE 9/11 Truth and the credibility that we have. So please, don't go back to sleep. It's wake-up time. Thank you.
I really appreciate that, and you're certainly lending a lot of credibility to those that are generally relegated to the tinfoil hats and what have you. If you would, just very briefly, give out your contact information again, your website, that sort of thing.
Sure. The website is AE911Truth.org. Stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And you can contact us through the website, sign the petition on the website, sign up for a free email newsletter there as well. And we're traveling all around the country. We'll be in Tucson June 26th, and this information is available on the website too. We'll be in Las Vegas July 17th, South Africa the last weekend of September, and China in mid-October, and we'll be in Washington, D.C. The week before September 11th and in New York on September 11th.
All right. Well, Richard, I really appreciate it. I know that since you've got a timeline, I've got some important announcements for our folks, but I want to go ahead and bid you farewell and Godspeed in all your efforts and everything you're doing, and then I'll continue on with some special announcements that I need to make.
Okay,
I mean, you're welcome to stick around, but if you got to go, I understand. So thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
All right. And everybody, that was Richard Gage of 9/11 Truth. And he it just works tirelessly, as you can see. He's reaching so many people that, you know, if you do that long enough, you can reach a critical mass. I wanted to let you know that we're going to have a complete change in our schedule. We're going to have a whole new time. We're moving next week to Thursday only. Thursday only. We're going to have one big webinar a week. And we're going to do it instead of at 3 p.m. Eastern or noon if you're in Pacific. You figure it in your time zone. In other words, the time we have at it. We're going to move it from that to 7 p.m. Eastern, or that would be 4 p.m. Pacific time where I'm at right now. So know that starting next week. This week we'll keep the same time. We're going to be back tomorrow with Michael Sweeney, who's going to be speaking on some very interesting things related to RFID technology and tracking dust, and a whole view of conspiracy that should be quite interesting. And then we're going to have Jim Tucker on Thursday. Jim Tucker is just back not long ago from being at the Bilderberg gathering. Not that he was one of the participants officially, but he has inside sources, and he was there as close as he could physically get to the site, filming, trying to record anything that he could record, trying to pick up anything he could. And he's got quite an exciting report to give us on Thursday. He's going on, it may not be the full hour, I don't know, we'll see, but he's a very busy man, and I was lucky to get him. But he's going to really spin it out for us and share exactly what he knows about the Bilderberg meeting and agenda and exactly what they have planned for us. And you can watch it play out by like a playbook from what he says. I can assure you of that. We've seen it year after year. So with that, we thank you again. I invite you to join us again tomorrow at the same time. And we appreciate all of you. We want you to listen to these recordings that we have posted at republicmagazine.com/webinar. Send them to your email list, share them with your friends, get the word out, and let's keep putting the information out until we turn the tide. That's what it's all about. So appreciate each and every one of you. We'll see you tomorrow, and this officially ends our webinar. Have a great afternoon and evening. Take care.
The moderator has left the conference.